Welcome to the Power Play Podcast, where international cricketer Kyron Powell and marketing genius Jordan Shannon join forces, bringing you captivating conversations with the biggest players in cricket and business. Join us as we dive into the lives of current stars in the cricketing world, the legends before them, and those extraordinary icons whose performances changed the game in both cricket and business. Exploring journeys both on and off the pitch, the boardroom, and everything in between. Get ready for an exhilarating blend of cricket, life, and business insights with two insatiably passionate, infuriatingly no-holds-barred hosts, who, unfortunately for the rest of us, live and breathe this stuff for a living.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 22 of the Power Play Podcast. I'm Jordan Shannon, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Kyron Powell. How are you, Kai?
I'm good, Jordan. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you very much. The nights are getting lighter. The clock's going forward at the weekend, so, you know.
It's gone forward already, hasn't it?
Yeah, it went on Sunday, yeah.
Yeah.
Through the night Sunday, so it's... You know, I'm actually coming back in and seeing a bit more light in the evenings, which is quite nice. So when do you head back to play cricket?
On the weekend, over the weekend. Everyone's got to be in Trinidad on Sunday. So,
right, okay. So what route do you do? How do you go home? How do you get back from London?
Honestly, I haven't planned it yet. I'm not going to think about that at the minute. I just enjoy being home, but probably get a straight flight, make it as easy as possible.
No, fair enough. Obviously, on tonight's episode, I want to sort of go over an interesting article that we both read as well on ESPN Cricket Info, which was in terms of the idea of bringing back the sort of Champions League sort of T20 tournament. What did you make of that article?
No, I never understood why they cancelled the Champions League T20 concept. Right. Obviously, from the advent of T20 in 2004 and then sort of when Alan Stanford sort of took it off and you could see that it was a thing and then Lalit Mody created the IPL.
Yeah.
Everyone knew that T20 was here to stay. And so I thought that the Champions League was an amazing addition to the global cricketing landscape, because then you have literally a footballing concept, not only of cricketing T20 franchises, but like the best franchises around the world playing against each other. It's the next, I guess, best thing you have apart from cricket and World Cups in terms of the standard. I guess what's going to be interesting now is because of how T20 leagues have grown and expanded to have various franchises with teams across various countries. Yeah. If, for example, a Kolkata Knight Riders, Trinidad Tobago Knight Riders, the Los Angeles Knight Riders, and an Abu Dhabi Knight Riders all qualify, what players are going to be made available to which teams? But outside of that, very exciting news. Look, I think it's one of the best things I've heard. If cricket is, and cricket has gone this way, I think definitely a Champions League is essential. What's going to be interesting is finding a window for it.
Yeah, that's what the article sort of touched on as well, is in terms of how to find, the gap in the, you know, which the already busy schedule to fit it in. As soon as I read it, as I picked up on exactly what you mentioned there in terms of how did they go about fitting in, you know, how's it going to work with these franchises that have, you know, certain players playing across all of the tournaments. But I think they need to figure out a way of, well, ideally they need to figure out a way of making it work, because like you said, this is going to be something that, you know, puts it in the same bracket as Champions League football, and in the way that it is the best of the best. And not only are you going to get the best of the best, you will also give certain players who may play in the PSL, which is not as high profile as the IPL or as high profile as the Big Bash, it's going to give them that platform with all the eyes, of the press, and everyone would be watching this sort of tournament, because that's what happens, you know, when the likes of, you know, some teams in Belgium play against, you know, the Real Madrids or the Barcelonas of the world. There's always an opportunity for a certain player to then make that big money move, because that's how obviously it works in football going forward. And I think that would be fantastic to see some of these teams, you know, from Pakistan, and even if it was to be, you know, some like Zimbabwe, for instance, to go and challenge, if it's going to be, you know, the Sydney Sixers in Sydney, you know, what an occasion that would be.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the teams that have won, I think it's something like CSK has won 2 times, yeah. Mumbai have won 2 times, and Sydney Sixers have won once,
and New South Wales. Yeah.
But I know, for example, Trinidad and Tobago had gotten to the finals against, was it New South Wales or Sydney Sixers, one of those.
One of the two.
And that sort of like catapulted, I think, Kieran Pollard into the IPL, because he went crazy in that Champions League T20. Yeah. So, I mean, like, you, as you said, like, you rightfully get exposure to people that wouldn't have normally had such a great platform. And it could only be good for cricket, you know, it could only be good for the advancement of cricket and the exposure to, I guess, those won't be unknown talents, because, I mean, you'd be champion of your respective territory, whatever country that is. But it just gives an added opportunity for someone to come and shine on a stage that probably, I mean, they wouldn't have, because, you know, some guys can play in their domestic T20 competition, but it's not everyone that's guaranteed a spot in the IPL. So it just gives a different opportunity for a guy to show that, you know, look, at this sort of level, I am capable of producing the goods.
And that's exactly it, is that, as we spoke about previously, that the IPL is where you make your potential life-changing money in that real, you know, rocket in terms of from a financial situation. And some of the, you know, the franchise tournaments don't have that, you know, boost of income that the IPL has. So it gives you that, again, it's going to give players that opportunity to go and do that. I just hope that maybe the ICC obviously take this on this and try and work out a way of trying to fit it in, and how they go about that. I think I don't know how they'll work it from an English side of things as well, because I know that we've got the Vitality Blast, and then we have the 100. So whether they just work it from 100, albeit it's not the same sort of, well, it is, but in obviously a different format to a certain extent. And I hope that, you know, the idea of it coming about and allowing, I just really want it to work out, to be honest with you, and I just hope that somehow it can.
Once money's involved, Jordan, in anything, especially that level of money, it will work out. That's not going to be a question about it. So I think it's just a matter of, as you said, timing and finding the right windows to make it happen. But, I mean, again, these are minor issues when you look at the grand scheme of things, because this will probably be like a 2-week tournament, because it's not an IPL where you've got 10 teams and everyone's playing everyone home and away. It's probably going to be maybe the same amount of teams, but it's literally going to be groups of maybe 2 groups of 5.
Everyone plays everyone once,
and then sort of straight knockout top 2 teams go through quarterfinals, make it short, sharp, interesting. So, I mean, it'd be an amazing addition. And I guess it's just a matter of, okay, how many teams from which countries, what's the cutoff date for qualification?
Is it,
for example, Australia that has their competition over, I guess, 2023 to 2024.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like you have in the CPL, it's a September type tournament. So, you know, is it the champions from the previous year? You know, what's the cutoff date, et cetera, for qualification and all of that stuff they'll figure out as they did before. I guess it's just the most important thing is finding a window, especially with there being a major ICC tournament every year for the next for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
And teams obviously having their own international schedules to contend with as well.
Of course. And I was just thinking then, in terms of it would be quite a nice opportunity to them potentially to go and put something in place post the ICC World, the T20 World Cup that's approaching, because there's going to be so much hype around that, and we're going to see some, you know, some great players going do some ridiculously good things, I imagine. And obviously there'll be some new blood on the scene as well, no doubt. So it would be quite nice to maybe, as that finishes, they make a bit of announcement in terms of what the plans that they've got and stuff. Because like you said, and when that money sort of levels are involved, it's going to be too hard to turn down. So
yeah, I mean, an announcement at that time, but I don't think it. Maybe the starting maybe next year.
You'd have to go 12 months, wouldn't it, sort of thing.
Yeah, because when you look at the cricketing calendar, you've got sort of five, six leagues that happen around the same time at the start of the year.
Yeah.
And then sort of the summer to September, you've got like an next four leagues happening in that period where you've got like the 100, you've got Vitality Blast, you've got CPL, you've got Major League, and you've got Sri Lankan Premier League as well.
Do you think this slightly, and we spoke about it before, this slightly contradicts the plan that we spoke about in terms of a player signing for a like a franchise group that we, and how would this then work moving forward if they was to sign with that, you know, with a GMR, for instance?
Well, in my opinion, this sort of brings parity, I guess, to the playing field. It sort of levels it out because then you, I mean, well, let's not say you can't, but ideally you won't want to see, for example, four or five teams owned by one group in a competition. That would just be like them having their own private competition, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it sort of levels out the playing field for, I guess, ownership opportunities and franchising opportunities for different entities, different groups. Whereas right now, as it stands, it would be a bit tricky because even just something as identifying which players will play for which team, how do you pick that, and then where do you get replacement players from?
Well, that's it, because naturally, again, from hypothetically speaking, would that mean that they would, if for instance David Warner, who plays for is the Delhi Capitals, would he automatically pay for the IPL team because they that's where he gets his greater income from?
Well, but I don't know, because then you have to think of it, because if that's the case, then he also played for the Capitals in ILT20.
ILT20, yeah.
And what happens if, I guess, he's a Sydney Thunder player? So what happens if they qualify? You know, is it the home territory that has first preference? Is it the IPL team that has first preference? Is it the greater salary that has first preference?
This is it. It's going to be hard, but I think I just want them to figure it out in a way where we get to see it. Because, you know, if we see the top 10 teams around the world, top 10 T20 teams around the world competing, then it's a great thing for fans and the sport.
I mean, it's something that's happened before, and I do know that I think previously it was something like the player had the choice, and then the team that they chose to play for, if they played for another team or multiple other teams that qualified, those teams got compensated from, I think it must have been the Champions League organization, and then they were able to go and get a replacement player from whatever pool of players. I don't know where the replacement pool of players was sourced or how it was sourced, but it was something like that happened. So, as I said, it's not something that hasn't happened. It's not something that would be hard for them to figure out, because they've done it before. It's just that the hardest thing is going to be finding a window. Everything else will sort of fall into place quite quickly.
Do you see that, the window being the biggest issue to solve?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
No, fair enough. I'm sure over the next 12 to 18 months, something, you know, whatever they may be announcement-wise or some plans, we'll see in due course. But following on from last week's, you know, your test 11, which was frightening in no uncertain terms, and some of the names there that were mentioned, like I said at the time, were great, not just greats of our generation, but greats of the game, full stop. So this now leads us on to your ODI best 11 that you played against. And when I got the message earlier, I was, again, like, wow. Then I've gone through again, I've had done a little bit of looking, and there's a couple of names that I think could have snuck in, but let's fire away.
All right, so opening the batting, we have the master, the little master, the master blaster, the man with the widest cricket bat I've ever seen, Sachin Tendulkar. I think it's only right, obviously, having held the record for the most ODI runs and centuries for such a long time. I think Virat's obviously broken the centuries part of it now. But, you know, just to achieve what he achieved, when he achieved it, you also have to think of, you know, you had two balls back. You had two balls. You have two balls now. You had one ball back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Balls were getting dark. They were getting scuffed up. You had reverse swing. You had how many players outside the circle.
Yeah.
The bats weren't as good. You know, so many different things to contend with. And obviously, he transitioned from playing in those days to obviously the earlier phases of what cricket is today as an entity. So I think it's an amazing career. I mean, that goes without saying. On an ODI side, to score the amount of runs that he did, transitioning from being a middle order batter to an opener early on in his career as well. So that's my lead off player, and I'm pretty sure I can depend on him for consistency.
Well, yeah, definitely. When I was looking through it, I didn't realize. Well, I did at the time, and I look back, but I'm sure he's got a 200 against South Africa about 8 games or 10 games before he retired.
Yep.
You know, not just, you think about natural, you know, career paths and stuff, not career paths, but like trajectory of a career. Towards the end of his career, he scored a 200 in Centurions. Yep. Like, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know,
I think he could still be playing if he really wanted to. Like, I mean, he started at 16. I mean, at 16, I was getting ready for my exams in school.
Yeah, exactly. No.
So there was no thought of international cricket in my mind, but special individual. Special 100%. And at number two, we've got another very special talent, also from Mumbai. Was first spotted by the man that he's going to be opening the batting with in Sachin Tendulkar. He's too, we've caught this guy's attention, Mr. Rohit Sharma. My absolute favorite cricketer to watch bat. I think that he's elegance personified. I think he hits some of the biggest sixes I've ever seen effortlessly. And I don't think people understand or appreciate how far he actually hits the ball. But not only just hitting the ball, his talent, his ability. I think that no matter what he achieves, people are going to think that he's underachieved because of the amount of talent he has as a player. Yeah. And that in itself was so much, I guess, pressure on him in the early stages of his career. And MS Dhoni sort of, again, similar to what happened with Sachin Tendulkar, gave Rohit Sharma an opportunity to go and open the batting in the Champions Trophy in 2013 here in England, and transformed him into an absolute monster. And the world has started, not just India, the entire world has reaped the benefits of seeing what he's gone. I mean, he's got three triple centuries. We're talking about Sachin Tendulkar. Yeah. He's got three triple centuries in 50 over cricket, which is mind-boggling. I mean, I even remember watching one where after 25 overs, he had 50 and he made 264. So that in itself was just like, to have someone that can do that is just amazing. So that's my opening pair.
Well, you may as well stop there.
And on to number three. I think I could have just skipped this spot, but I mean, we have to give a name to this spot anyway. So we'll just slot the casual Virat Kohli in at number three. What a top three.
Yeah.
130 something international centuries in one day cricket between them. I mean, we know the consistency of Sachin Tendulkar. We know the ability of Rohit Sharma, and you just bundled it all into one, and they had a baby, and it was Virat Kohli. his numbers are absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, you look at his stats, like it's mind-boggling that someone had the determination, the hunger, the fitness, the drive to to want to just continue to achieve year after year after year what he's been able to do. And the thing is, for me as well, for those three, it's not even just consistently doing it year after year, but the pressure that they're under as well, being Indian cricketers, you know, the demand on Indian cricketers is so much. And you're talking about a country of 1.5, if not more, billion people that have an absolute love for the game and follow every single move that they make. So it's not easy at the best of times for them, you know, in terms of living an ordinary life as a civilian. So to achieve all these things when it's sort of really difficult for you to have some time away from cricket and have personal space in your day-to-day life, it's commendable. And, you know, I think that top three will be able to provide me with, at the very least, a good platform in pretty much most conditions around the world.
Anyway, I was going to say that as well. Anywhere around the world, it wouldn't be an issue for any of them. She's just, you know, superb. And who have you got a four then?
Again, very casual. I think this young guy is sort of the benchmark of, I guess, his generation of players. Along with him, you would have had, I guess, sort of a Quinton de Kock before he retired. Obviously, Shea, who's around the same age, number of games, stats are similar as well, but gone with Baba Azam, Pakistan, newly reappointed skipper of the white ball teams. I think, obviously, barring age, when you look at his numbers, like for like, compared to Virat's at this point in time of their careers, it's as close as a parallel as they would be. He's got something like 19 ODI centuries in like 110 games, average of 56. So absolutely phenomenal. In ODI cricket, he gets the job done.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of asking whether, if, where, how, when. He simply goes out and he gets the job done. I think, you know, lots of people like to compare him and Virat, the way they play, etc. Obviously, both love to cover drive the ball. So there are lots of similarities. Yeah. And obviously, the India-Pakistan aspect to it as well.
Yeah, naturally, there's going to be comparisons.
But I think for the purposes of this team, fortunately, we get to enjoy both of them together, as opposed to, you know, the natural debate of India-Pakistan, you know. So that's a positive there, and he's my number four.
Now, your number five was genuinely a very interesting pick from my perspective. Very interesting.
Well,
I can't disagree with it, but go on.
I've gone with Owen Morgan at number five.
Yeah.
And it's a plethora of reasons as to why I've gone with him. I think that I wanted a left-hander in there. Obviously, the top four are all right-handers. I think that his ability, obviously playing in the middle, overs to play against the spin, all these sweeps and reverse sweeps, and being able to hit down the ground, obviously sort of take the game to the fast bowlers coming back for their second spells, etc. His ability in the field and his leadership mentality. His leadership mentality is something that I thought that would be. I mean, not that this team is void of leaders. The top four are all international captains, and so is he. So I've got options to choose from. But no, I think that he brings an added dimension to the team that are sort of lacked, and that's why I chose to go to Owen Morgan at number five.
Yeah, definitely. I think with Owen Morgan, I'd just like to add a little bit of, like, about that you're saying about his leadership. I think the big change with England's white ball with that period of success was around him, and the way his game management and the way he's set games up with his batting, but also from an on the field captaincy perspective, and his bowling changes and his tactics towards what they were doing. I know that the bowlers obviously implemented various tactics and superbly at times, but I think his leadership and the way he maintained that level of focus was really, really important.
100%, and you know, all of those things are sort of factored into.
Yeah,
I mean, I was looking at potentially a Juve Red thing as well.
Yeah,
but I figured I'll go with an Owen Morgan because my number six starts to have leveled out the playing field as to why I didn't go the Juve Red thing. I chose Shakib Al-Hassan.
Yeah,
Bangladesh.
That was a great pick.
Obviously, yeah, number one ranked all around in the world in pretty much any format as long as he plays enough games. I think, you know, he sort of pipped that Juve Raj selection and allowed me to go with Owen Morgan because I think Shakib is sort of a like for like with Juve Raj Singh in terms of the batting and obviously in terms of the bowling he offers a lot more. He can basically consider him a frontline batter and a frontline bowler. He's that good of cricketer in any format, but definitely in the one day format. And we've seen what he's done in the 50 over World Cup here in 2019 as well. And what he's done across his career, across various countries, it's been nothing short of exceptional. So Shakib Al-Hassan at number six.
Definitely. Good pick. Wicketkeeper.
Easiest choice I had of the entire team selection, I must be fair. And we are talking about a team with Sachin Tendulkar and Virat Kohli.
Yeah.
Wicketkeeper, MS Dhoni, and captain of my 11.
Yeah.
100%. I don't think I need to say much on this. I think, obviously, the best ODI wicketkeeper batsman we've ever seen. Again, someone that's averaging 50, I can bat him anywhere from 3 to 7. He's that versatile. Obviously, his finishing skills are second to none, and we've seen it over the course of his career. I mean, at 42, he's still going in the IPL and still doing amazing things, which I don't even know how he does it because he's not playing much cricket these days, but he's obviously still in good health and still keeping active enough that he can perform on such a high level of cricket. But in his heyday, we know what he was as a player, what he is as a leader, whether he's the captain or not, the calmness, the maturity, the clarity that he brings to any situation that he's in sort of made it a very easy pick.
Yeah, and yeah, no, I actually, when I was going through it, I looked at, and you've played against some top keepers, you know, Brendan McCullum, Joss Butler, you know, and yeah, it's just, it was literally like going, it was just a no-brainer sort of pick.
Yeah.
And that's like you said, when you're picking the top three, that you, well, the top six so far anyways, it's a real credit to him. And you mentioned it before about him still playing now, and that is, like you said before about all the pressures that come with playing, you know, even in the IPL, he's just such a cool, calm, collected individual. And the impact that must have on the team is just, you know, we must be fantastic and fair play. Like, yeah, an absolute shoo-in.
And if you look at the team, the top seven are all international captains, mind you.
Yeah.
They've all captained. So I could literally just flip a coin and see any one of you. Whoever wants to do it today, whoever can be bothered, just going to be with this nonsense pressure. No. But at number eight, I've gone with Ravi Chandran Ashwin. Sort of wanted an off spinner in there. Having flicked through my mind, I've just remembered someone else that I've played against, but I won't bring that up now. I've gone with Ashwin because I wanted an off spinner in the team. Obviously, I've got Shakib from a bit of left arm, and so I wanted left arm and then off break as well. You know, I like to have that combination, one going in, one going away.
Yeah,
working in tandem. So I think that was probably the best option available to me in terms of off spinners.
So, God, who's the other one you're going to mention then?
Well, mind you, I've just remembered it wasn't an off spinner. So I was thinking earlier, I could have gone with Kuldeep, but then I didn't want to have two left arm spinners. Mind you, obviously, both of them are two different types of left arm spinners. But I've just remembered I've played against Rashid Khan.
Nice. Right. Okay.
And so it depends on conditions.
Why are you giving yourself options now?
I'll get Rashid Khan in there though. So it's Ashwin slash Rashid Khan. Yeah, 100%. Because obviously, what Rashid Khan gives you, the bat and in the field as well. Complete cricketer. And a good positive person to be around in the environment as well. So that's sort of my number eight wrapped up.
Are you on with three more quicks?
Yep, 100%. I'm a big fan of three quicks in my team. So at number nine,
Nine, yeah.
I've gone with Mitchell Starc. I don't think I need to say much on that. I mean,
No.
his white ball record is second to none. I mean, I think he's the leading wicket taker in 50 over World Cups, if I'm not mistaken, past Glenn McGrath. And just what he does early up, swinging that new ball, getting early wickets for Australia, coming back in the end, wrapping up the tail, goes for a few runs here and there. I mean, who doesn't? But
Well, yeah.
as a wicket taker, his ability, and obviously left arm, and with that kind of pace, 100% wanted him in my team. So I've gone with Mitchell Starc there.
Yeah. No, again, another like his record speaks for itself. No words needed, really.
Number 10, another left armer. Just hop across the Trans-Tasman, picking up Trent Bolt's short flight. Got to get on board this plane. I mean, obviously everyone has to make their own decisions, and it's unfortunate that he sort of retired. Well, he hasn't retired, but he's not necessarily playing, I guess, as much cricket for New Zealand anymore as
No.
he used to. Obviously, he played in that World Cup just gone, and he probably will be playing in this T20 World Cup coming up as well, which is, I mean, great to see, because the skills that he possesses and the quality that he brings to any team that he's a part of, it's obviously, I mean, for me, I like playing against the best, and Trent Bolt definitely tests you his entire spell, whether
Yeah,
it be
both.
sort of in and out, with a good short ball, keeping you honest, and just finding something out of the conditions, whether it's suitable to him or not, is an asset to have as a fast bowler, and someone that you can trust to deliver in pretty much, as I said, any sort of conditions that may come across you as well.
No, definitely. Definitely. And with, well, we're either way now with Stark and Bolt, you've got two top left armers. And wrapping the side up.
Wrapping it up, I've gone for a right arm quick. Jasprit Bumrah, I don't think he needs much introduction. I
No.
think he's sort of, it's crazy to say, he's the banker when you look at this team. I mean, he's got an exceptional bowling lineup, and to be able to have him and Mitchell start closing out the death overs with left arm Yorkers, Bumrah's obviously right arm Yorkers, different trajectory in terms of his release points, his slower balls, his bumpers. He's the full arsenal. Like, he just seems to have an understanding of the situation so well, Jasprit Bumrah, in terms of when to do what. Like, it would be a test match, and he'd run in and bowl a slower ball that gets a batsman caught by surprise, or the perfect Yorker in a 50-over match. And he has wits beyond, I guess, even his playing experience, because he's still young in terms of his playing days, and he'll continue to improve and grow, which is scary because he's already sort of a complete package. But I just think that for the benefits of this team, in terms of the players that I've played against, he complements those two left arm seamers really well, and he adds a different dimension to the team. Obviously, lots of pace in that bowling attack, with him and Mitch Starc, and lots of skill with the three bowlers that do a lot with it, and then the spinning options as well.
Yeah, definitely. The one name who I thought would feature would be Ben Stokes.
I sort of went for Shakib ahead of Ben Stokes, and I think that's
Yeah, I totally see why you've gone in for the dynamic perspective in terms of, you know, you've got some left down spin there.
Yeah. I don't think that Ben Stokes's record in ODI cricket is that great either, that it sort of merits selection. I think Shakib is...
Yeah, I get it. Ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. I'm just being picky.
Why would I expect an English fan to want Ben Stokes in the team?
The other one I thought might feature was Michael Clarke.
Yeah, I thought about that after the Test 11, actually. I thought that he might feature, but then I think the Test 11 was pretty solid. So Michael Clarke would be obviously a great reserve to have. And remind you, we still had guys like Kane Williamson not in that Test 11. That just goes to show the quality of players that they are. Speaking of Michael Clarke, though, I think that he doesn't get recognised as much in retirement now as he should do. You know, someone that's had such an amazing career. You're talking about someone with a top score of 329 not out. And then I think he followed that up the next week with like 250 something, if I'm not mistaken.
Again, I felt he had a lot of pressure on his shoulders as well.
Yeah, because he was dealing with an Australian team in transition.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like you said, I think it does go unnoticed a lot, really, in terms of, you know, the way he came into the side. You know, I think it was 2004, 2005, in that great team. They came over to England, lost the Ashes, and then the way that he came back, and obviously they did what they did in England, but he just continued to score runs.
Yeah.
And you know, I thought, you know, he was a top captain as well to go with it. You know, I love watching him bat. Love watching him bat. I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, really, really top quality cricketer. Obviously offers a bit of left arm spin as well, and gun fielder anywhere in the field. So
I got an interesting story. He played at my childhood club.
Okay.
And one of my first memories of it. Of him, should I say, he had the ability to throw the ball left-handed and right-handed across the width of the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm sure that's not normal. I was about 13 or 14 at the time, and I remember thinking, and then his fielding was just phenomenal.
he's a top-quality cricketer.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know, because obviously lots of the Aussie players come to England in the summer because of...
Yeah.
You know, the change of hemispheres and stuff, and lots of the English players go to Australia, you know, in their winter as well. So I guess you guys get exposed to them a lot at a younger age, especially like the ones that are super talented that are coming across maybe for just to fill the gap for a summer before they sort of take off or whatever the case is. It would have been interesting, for example, if, you know, some of the guys that chose to play for Australia played for England, you know, like maybe like an Andrew Symons or even a Steve Smith.
Yeah. No, definitely. Definitely.
Imagine a Steve Smith and Joe Root batting together, for example.
Again, fear for the bowlers. that would be a tough night. But yeah, thank you very much. For that, again, another ridiculously strong 11 that would challenge any 11s around that have taken place. Great balance. And I think I love the way that you broke it down and you've not just gone for 11 names. You've gone with it from a tactical perspective. I think it's really good and really insightful.
No, it is, John. I think, that Rashid Khan one really slipped me, but slipped him in there somehow, you know.
Yeah. Cool. Speak to you soon anyway.
Cheers, Jordan. Great episode.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you for joining us on the Power Play podcast, hosted by Kyron Powell and Jordan Shannon. We hope you enjoyed this immersive dive into the world of cricket and business, exploring the unique experiences and perspectives of players past and present, alongside those invaluable insights into intriguing business themes that transcend beyond the boundaries of sporting heroics. Be sure to set your reminders on your Alexa or Google Home device. Or we won't tell anyone if you still use those paper calendar things from a bygone era. Join us next time for more inspiring dialogue with scintillating minds on the Power Play podcast.